with 6 years of trying to give up things that's difficult to give up, that create a good karma for me to become a monk. Just like the spiritual prediction of Pure Land students, if they reach spiritual achievement, they will be able to foresee or predict the time of death. I too, due to the practice of six words sincerely for 6 years, I developed an insight, a hunch, that I know I will become a monk. And my friends asked me, when do you think you will become a monk? I told them, pretty soon, probably within 6 months. Actually, was less than 1 month I became a monk, because Lingji Temple sent people to my places and request me to become a monk for 9 times. So you see, for me to become a monk, it was due to other people's persuasion. It's not I begged them to accept me as a monk. It was them begged me to become a monk for 9 times. Due to their sincerity, I became a monk. To put six paramitas into practice, one must first have a thorough understanding of its meaning. Then one can put into practice effectively. There is another person I owe great gratefulness to him. That is Mr. Zhu Jingzhou, because he gave me a book famous in Chinese history called The Four Precious Lessons of Mr. Yuan Liaofan. And I read that book many times. I compare myself against Mr. Yuan Liaofan. I'm similar to his situation, but actually worse than him. I have all the problems and troubles, just like the author of that book. And after reading so many times, I firmly believe to just drink a cup of water or eat a meal, it is all predetermined from your personal fate. And that's why I encourage my students or friends to read at least 300 times of this four precious lesson. Then you will have thorough understanding and a firm belief about this book, which deal with the law of cause and conditions. If one has wealth and longevity of one's life, it is because one has created the proper course in previous lifetimes in order to enjoy the wealth and longevity of this life. However, this fate of this life can be changed. If one cut off all the wrong habits, wrong actions, and one's fate will turn into better. Take the giving away, for example, or almsgiving. If you give away more money or wealth from your savings, and the result is you obtain more money in return. If you give away more teachings, then in return, you become wiser. If you offering fearless statement to help those who depressed or troubled, then in return of your kindness, you're going to have a good karma of long life and good health. All of us like to have wealth, wisdom, health, and longevity, but we just don't put into practice to accumulate the causes. that result in the good results. When I was young, I was skinny, and my face, according to the fortune teller, is a face of short life. They actually predicted that my life expectancy will not go beyond 45 years of age. And that's probably my previous lifetime. I only emphasize the practice of wisdom and ignored accumulation of merits. And also it's true because my ancestors are all short life. So at the age of 45, I was very ill. And I give up to see doctors because I know doctors can cure the illness, but they cannot prolong life expectancy. So I just give up and sit in my place or home, recite Buddha name, waiting for Buddha to take me away to his pure land. Surprisingly, 1 month later, my illness was healed, and I was still healthy even today. And after this experience, I met Ganju Tuku, a famous Vajrayana Theravada, the Vajrayana teacher in Taiwan. That was the year before his passing away. He told me, he said, "We all talk about behind you that you are going to be short life because the way you present yourself and the face is not a long life, a sign of a long life. But now you have been changed totally. I think it's because your merits are spreading the Dharma, explaining the sutra to audience. Due to these merits, you have changed your face and you're going to enjoy your life and you're going to live a long, long life." So, in Buddhism, there are a lot of truths and teachings to help us become happy and long life. As long as you're sincere to pursue, all the good fortunes you look for will fulfilled. The almsgiving, there are three types of almsgiving. First one is almsgiving of giving away of wealth, and the second one is almsgiving of Dharma teachings, and the third one is almsgiving or giving away of fear. Giving away the wealth is a typical almsgiving. The offering of Dharma is the second type. And the sixth paramita, in which the diligence, the samadhi, and prajna or wisdom belong to the Dharma giving. And the last one is called offering of fearlessness. Which one is belong to this item? That is precept, observance, and patience. Why these two belong to the fearless offering? Because if one follows the precepts, such as not stealing, then people around you will not be worried about losing money, because they know you observe that precept, you will not steal their money. And therefore, your friends around you will not be fear about losing money. Likewise, paramita of patience will give people feeling of fearlessness. Because if they say word to you incorrectly, they know you practice patience. You will not fight back. So they become fearless. So actually, all the six paramitas are in one, which is giving away or offering. And that's the main practice of a bodhisattva. If you think about this and give away your money, give away your illness, give away your pain, give away your life and death, give away 6 realms of reincarnation, then you'll be totally free and liberated. Take example of give away illness for good. I'll give you an example. If you put money aside called health insurance, and that is you have money ready in store for illness one day when you become old or ill. And because you have that preparation mentally and psychologically, you are already creating an illness because your mind has already waiting for that kind of thing to happen. That's why in the United States, I have no medical insurance. I don't have money for that. I give that money away to help other people. And in my mind, I don't have money, so I cannot be sick because I don't have insurance. And because mentally, you are not ready for illness. And so far, I'm healthy and no problem. Observing the precept does not just have its narrow meaning of following the precepts. It actually means, in a broader sense, to follow all the teachings written in the sutra and given by Lord Buddha and put into practice. One needs to have a thorough understanding and then put into practice. In the beginning, it may not be easy. When you truly put into practice, after some time, you're going to enjoy living in such teachings. To further expand the precept observance, then all the customs, rules, regulations in the society need to be followed. To follow these means when deal with good people, you follow those rules. When deal with bad people or evil people, you need to follow those rules too. And still able to live with them, whether good or bad, in total harmony. So to practice precept observance, we need to cultivate a mind of equanimity. The next paramita is patience. Without patience, there will be no achievement. In order to have a greater achievement, it takes greater patience. In order to become Buddha, it takes the utmost patience. And that's why practice of patience is a very important item for Bodhisattva. Last night we talked about follower teacher of a certain lineage for 5 years. It takes patience because during these 5 years, you are not allowed to look, read, listen to other things, but only those material permitted by your teacher. We also heard that the man's patience is limited. This is a true statement. But in Buddhism, not only patience, we have another paramita, which is diligence. By diligence, one will work very hard in one single direction without distractions. And after some time, due to streamlined efforts, samadhi will arrive. When the samadhi arrives, combined with the original patience, the patience becomes unlimited. And of course, after samadhi, the wisdom will also follow. And that's why one must first possess samadhi and wisdom. Then one is qualified to practice all dhammas. Until then, one need to practice patience and diligence instead of learn all the dhammas. The samadhi in Chinese contains two words. First one, chan. Second word, ding. Chan means when interface with external affairs or environment, one does not become tempted or distracted. The second word, ding, means inwardly there was no thought generated. In the Universe Sutra, the famous student San Cai Tongzi went to visit a great teacher, but couldn't find the teacher. People told him the teacher is practicing samadhi in a big mall, like today's shopping mall. So what kind of meditation he's practicing? He's practicing the high-class samadhi. High-class samadhi is in total samadhi, whether walking, standing, sleeping, whether interface with merchandise or not, and no distraction of the mind. And if you practice the high-level, high-class samadhi, then you reach the state of no disturbances or obstacle between when interface with reality. And you also reach the harmony between theory and reality. But if your samadhi is only low level, when you see things, your mind start wandering or moving, then you need to quickly return home and practice your meditation. Because low-level meditation cannot make you to be in total unmoving state once you receive the challenge interfacing with external world. Take a look at this example of shopping mall. When you see many objects clearly, that's a function of wisdom, because you know what that those things are. But when you think a good merchant and your heart start moving, that means you have no samadhi. So to practice a high class samadhi, you can go to the shopping mall. You know everything as they are, which is samadhi, and yet you have no thought generated from within your heart or mind. Then you are practicing of samadhi and wisdom are in balance. In Buddhism, the training of a young monk, novice monk, one rule was these young novice monks are not allowed to go to dancing place to enjoy MTV, so to speak, because they cannot sustain the temptation of the external world. But if you have practiced good enough, then you are allowed to go outside, receive the challenges, and to eventually achieve a perfect balance between samadhi and wisdom. Today's lecture finished at this point, and tomorrow we're going to discuss the 10 great vows of the Samatabhadra Bodhisattva's teaching. Thank you. Dear Dharma Masters and dear fellow practitioners, time flies very quickly. Today is the fifth day of the 7-day Bunanin chanting retreat. We're going to have a lecture tonight and tomorrow night, and that will be the last one for lecture. Following that one, we're going to have three time remembering chanting Dhamma assembly on the last day, and that night we're not going to have a lecture. From this, we realize that impermanence comes very promptly. In our precious time, 7 days of retreat, we have now entered into the fifth day. Therefore, whenever possible, to have the opportunity to practice the proper Dhamma, we should be always precious about these opportunities and work harder. Tonight, I'm going to introduce universal worthy Bodhisattva Mahasattva's 10 great vows. These vows came from the Universe Sutra, one chapter. If one do not follow universal worthy Bodhisattva's 10 great vows, then one cannot perfect one's Buddhahood. In the Chinese Tiantai school or sect, they categorize Buddha into four types. That is, the specific Buddha, the general Buddha, the special Buddha, and the most perfect and profound Buddha. Let's take a look at the word universal worthy Bodhisattva Mahasattva, his title. This title contains two words. The first one means universal, means with a mind of equanimity and pervading in all areas. That is, the mind has no attachment to any single point, has no discrimination, no matter how small that discrimination or attachment may be. So if one's mind still has small amount of attachment or distinguish, then the mind is not universally equal. The mind is not prevailing in all aspects without discrimination. The second word of this Bodhisattva's title, worthy, or maybe translated as goodness, is the wish of this Bodhisattva to wish all sentient beings to become holy and to become sage. To become sage is an expectation to reach the second highest level next to Buddha. To become holy is universal worthy Bodhisattva's expectation and wish to wish all sentient beings reach the highest level, that is Buddha. So this title of this Bodhisattva clearly describe the mentality of universal worthy Bodhisattva and also his vows. If we just recite these 10 items or 10 great vows without truly having the same attitude or mentality, then we are not really following the universal worthy Bodhisattva's sincere wish. The first great vow among the 10 universal worthy Bodhisattva's 10 great vows is to respect all Buddhas. Literally, it means to prostrate and respect to all Buddhas. So if you just bow to Buddha sincerely, you think you are accomplishing or following the first great vows, then you are totally wrong. The Universe Sutra says very good. It says, all sentient beings were originally the enlightened Buddhas. And all Buddhas means the past, present, and future sentient beings. So this first great vow refers to respect all sentient beings, because the sentient beings have great potential of Buddha nature and is capable to become Buddha. So to respect all Buddhas essentially means to respect all sentient beings without discrimination. And that's why the first precepts indicates no killing, not even a small ant. Because ant has Buddha nature, has great potential to become Buddha in the future. If we kill an ant, we are not respect Buddha, the future one. In the Universe Sutra, not only mention all sentient beings are Buddhas by nature, even non-sentient beings are Buddhas too. The chairs, the table, the candles, everything you see which is not a living life, but they do have Dhamma nature, and Dhamma nature is not separated from the Buddha nature. And that's why when Buddha Sakyamuni first obtained supreme enlightenment, he realized that all sentient beings and non-sentient beings, such as universe, mountain, river, are all originally no different than Buddha. Then the question is, when will the non-sentient beings, such as a mountain and the trees, mountains, become Buddha? They will become Buddha or reach Buddhahood at a time when the sentient beings reach Buddhahood. Then you may ask a question, when do I become Buddha? At a time when you cease everyone, not just everyone, but Buddhas, that's the time you become Buddha. But if you still have someone that you dislike very much, that discriminating mind exists in yourself, is an indication that you are not reached Buddhahood yet. So the first great vow to respect all Buddhas is to teach us cultivate a mind of equanimity or non-discrimination and respect all. This is similar to the Confucius teaching in the book called A Proper Manner Record. It says there's nothing one should not respect, which is basically the same meaning as in Buddhism, which that says respect all. So the holy person in China, the Confucius, has the same viewpoint as the great Buddha in India. They were not born at the same time, same place, and they never met each other. However, they do share the same viewpoints. And the reason to respect all sentient beings, all Buddhas, is to eradicate the inherent arrogance in our mind. Since the objective of the Confucianism is to make a person a better person and not to reach complete enlightenment, so they only talk about arrogance should be under control, should not get worse. But in Buddhism, the ultimate goal is to become completely enlightened. And that's why even the root of arrogance needs to be eradicated. And how to eradicate? Simply practice in any situation and subdue the mind of arrogance. And constantly practice to treat all beings, like or dislike, with an equal mind. I have told my student another way to do this effectively is to put the name of your enemy, or the one you dislike the most, and wish him or her long life and good health, and make a special plate, put to the shrine room on the shrine table, and bow to Buddha as well as to your enemy. But my disciple or student said, "Yes, I have followed your